It's mayhem for your mind.
Welcome, everyone, to the first edition of the Heck Yeah Comics podcast. I am David Luzader here with you, and with me is...
Nick Shermooksness.
Fantastic. He's my monkey in the corner.
Yep, that's... Wait, what? No, I'm not.
Anyway, so what are we doing here? We are here to talk about comics.
And I'm going to throw feces, because apparently I'm just a monkey.
Should we keep this? Should we keep going with this?
Just keep going.
Just keep going. All right. We're still in this.
People are going to understand that this is a first podcast. It's like Penny Arcade or that other one that I can't think of the name of. It starts off and everyone's like, wow, this is kind of crappy, but there's something redeemable about it. And then 5 years from now, they're going to have a convention named after us. The Heck Yeah Comics Convention.
That's not going to happen.
It's going to happen, David.
All right. Anyway. So we're just a couple of comic book nerds. Who, that's actually how Nick and I first started talking, was through comics. So our relationship is extremely shallow.
Yep. I don't think we talk about much else.
it's pretty much that.
Which works for this podcast, I assume. You know, it's not the current events podcast.
Right. We can keep it professional, which is what everybody here wants.
Yeah. They want to hear two really well-educated people speaking articulately about people in tight costumes punching each other.
I never said we were articulate.
Well, right. I'm hoping we're articulate.
So just to give you an idea of who we are, I'm more of the DC guy, and Nick is more of the Marvel guy. And somewhere in the middle, we pick up a bunch of indie stuff, because usually that's of higher quality than DC and Marvel, let's be honest.
Yeah. Is it really... Are we able to call it indie now? I mean, independent, sure, but I mean, Image is so huge now. I mean, it is the number three publisher,
and
it's
really
pretty. It is, and it's pretty in vogue as far as. Do people say in vogue?
I don't know.
It's pretty in vogue as far as like what everyone's reading these days. Like, yeah, like the superhero comics are like the ones that like are making the most money, I guess you would say. But at least in the last couple of years, Image has really staked the name for itself as the Are you tired of people in tight costumes? Well, come read our books where you have robot relationships and post-apocalyptic alternative U.S. history westerns and other stuff that Image has. I could only think of two books, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, those are kind of the big ones. So what'd you pick up this week? You kind of sent me the list. It was a doozy.
Yeah. I don't have all of them in front of me right now.
That's what you got off the top of your head.
But off the top of my head, from like Marvel, I got Black Widow, Iron Fist, all new X-Factor, Cyclops, which I'm really excited about as I'm a huge Cyclops fan. Hopefully that doesn't color me in the eyes of other people that apparently give him a bad rap. Amazing Spider-Man Learning to Crawl. It kind of takes place between like the first five issues of Spider-Man ever. Amazing Fantasy number 15 and Amazing Spider-Man 1-5. Just because I had to memorize that. And then on the DC side, I got Batman Eternal, New 52 Futures Ends, Detective Comics, and I think that was it for this week, for DC at least. And then I got Alex plus Ada, which I'd love to talk about near the end of the show. And I thought I picked up another independent book, but it's not coming to me. So that's what I'll stick with for now.
All right. That's quite the list. And usually, usually you don't pick up that much, right?
Yeah. I mean, some weeks are definitely going to be bigger. I mean, it really comes down to release schedule. So it was a big week this week, but other weeks might be really small. So it kind of evens out
as far as
my budget is concerned.
Yeah, I had a couple of like smaller weeks the last couple weeks, and I went in today and he like hands me a stack of like, you know, six or seven books, and I'm like, oh, this is where all my money's going.
I know. Now that I've kind of filled out my pull list, it's sort of like I don't really like go in ahead of time, like looking at the diamond list and seeing what's coming out week by week. I just kind of want to walk in and be surprised. But I keep walking in, they keep handing me a big stack, and I'm like, oh. But when you're in, like, that place, I don't know about you, but, like, I have to be in a comic shop for, like, 2 hours to, like I'll pick, like, 30 things up, and I'll totally come up with justifiable reasons for why I need to get all of them. But if you give me a couple hours, eventually I'll put 60% of them back.
Right.
And at least it's much more financially feasible. But if I'm being rushed or if like, I need to get somewhere, and it's like, oh, well, there's this giant stack of comic books. Oh, I really got to get going. Well, I don't have time to put them back. I might as well buy them.
Yeah, I don't have the 2 hours to spend. Like, my whole process is I go in, I either get, like, whatever on my sub list. You know, he hands it to me right as I walk in the door. And then I walk back to the new wall, and I look there, and I'm like, all right, anything, like, that I've been picking up that's not on my sub list because I've been too lazy to add it? Or is there, like, any new exciting series this week that I'm thinking about getting into? And then, like, I try to get out of there within, like, 10 minutes because I'll very easily fall into the trap of, like, well, now I'm going to walk down this middle aisle, which has all of the, you know, the trade collections of DC and Marvel. And, man, I really, you know, I need to pick up that next volume of Sandman because I'm 2 decades behind everyone else reading that.
Right? I mean, are we even going to be able to call ourselves comic book fans if we haven't both read Sandman all the way through, which I haven't, I will admit.
Well,
I think I'm like halfway through.
Yes. I don't see how that would stop us. I mean, if somebody's going to stop listening to us right now because we haven't read Sandman all the way through, then I'm going to shed a single tear. Not now, probably later.
That's probably more tears than you've ever shed, I think.
Yeah.
You are a dangerous, emotionless man.
I'm a cyborg from the future.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. All right, so that now we're just being crazy. But you know what's cool about this week is that 2 major events started for both DC and Marvel. And let's kind of, let's dive into the DC one because that's the only one that we've both read currently.
Was that
Future's End?
Right. Okay. Let's keep going.
All right. So Future's End, which I just read 20 minutes ago, said you're usually better at summarizing, I feel like, what's going on in these events. So,
well, I mean, if I had to describe it in one sentence, and it'll probably end up being 2 sentences because I suck at that.
That's fine.
I don't want anyone who enjoys it to take this wrong way, because on some level I definitely enjoyed it, but basically I would say 4 sentences later that it's everything that hasn't been working about the new 52 in one book.
Interesting.
I mean, I guess I shouldn't say not working. I think maybe not necessarily on a critical level. I could usually separate like critical and like financial. Definitely, like, a lot of the characters that are featured in the books are from series that were canceled. Some of them, I mean, if you really want to get far out there, are characters that, like, there may have been a lot of, like, creative team issues going on behind the scenes that's really neither here nor there. But, I mean, you've got, you basically have at the center of it, with the exception of maybe Batman Beyond, who's had a bit of a resurgence in the last couple of years, you have the Firestorm, who, you know, whose book was canceled. You have Grifter, whose book was canceled. You actually have a lot of the Wildstorm characters tying in, like Stormwatch. And other characters that are going to come back in the future, Amethyst, you know, which was a book that got canceled. Frankenstein got canceled.
Yeah.
Mr. Terrific. Like, it's actually a lot of sort of the, you know, DC had said a while back that, you know, just because these characters' books are being canceled doesn't mean we're not going to utilize them. And this is kind of all those canceled books coming together in one weekly series, maybe as a last hurrah. Really, the first issue almost seemed like it was trying to sweep some of that off the deck and hopefully repurposing it for later down the road.
Right. And I mean, and as we usually see, whenever a series gets canceled, it's usually not like the character like gets shot and is never heard from again. It's usually like, oh, you know, now the character's going to go have their adventures in Justice League United.
Yep.
Or something like that. They're going to disappear for a while. And then, you know, 8 years down the road, somebody's going to come back and be like, hey, you know that superhero that can absorb animals' powers? Let's go ahead and, like, repurpose him and talk about him again, and it's going to be amazing. And then everyone who tries after that's just going to not do as well, and it'll go away again. And then 10 years later, it'll come back. Like,
yeah, it's, I mean, I think that what everyone gets in their head, which I think, and I think the publishers got this in their head too, was that a successful series has to be one that lasts for decades, that the barometer for the bar of success is Amazing Spider-Man, is Avengers, is Justice League, is Batman,
right?
You know, maybe at least at this point all of their series have been rebooted and relaunched, but they've always come back. They're always the intentions that they're going to come back, and they're just plain successful. Whereas someone like Frankenstein, you know, has like a I don't know, it was like a 10 issue run or something like that, right? It gets canceled. And it's like, oh, his series was canceled too soon. It didn't have enough time to take off, you know, or the character's radioactive. Maybe he just doesn't have a wide appeal. And at the end of the day, like, I think when we launch all these quote unquote ongoing series, thinking that if they last forever, which obviously forever hasn't happened yet, but, you know, if they last a really, really long time, then awesome, success. But if they last like a year, then whatever. And I think that we should stop focusing on the ongoing, like the idea that these stories are ongoing, because at least what Marvel has done is, oh, so-and-so, Matt Fraction or whoever, you know, comes onto a book, they write it for 16, 18, you know, 2-3 years, and then they leave, and then they relaunch the book with the next creative team. So instead of being sort of like Amazing Spider-Man 4000, it's, you know, yeah, it's Amazing Spider-Man 1 again, but it's, okay, not actually in the case of the current Amazing Spider-Man, but it's, you know, a whole new creative team. It's, you kind of, anyone who wants to get on the ground floor can get in at this point.
Right. Speaking of Matt Fraction, remind me when we get a little bit later in the show, there was a rumor I heard earlier today that kind of about his involvement with some Marvel stuff. But let's kind of reel back to Future's End, which is what we started this tangent with.
That's going to happen a lot.
Yeah, so your just initial thoughts just after reading it, you know, we haven't really had time to absorb it yet. Just what are your initial thoughts of the book?
I feel that from an execution standpoint, I think that it's the first issue, and I hate being that guy that's, you know, gonna pass like a full judgment off of like 20 pages of story. There's some really juicy bits in there. Like, I'm definitely excited to see how this version of Batman Beyond plays in, where he's going to end up.
Yeah, I really like the robotic Alfred he has with him.
Yep, that was cool.
That's
like that.
Yeah, that's something we really haven't seen in Batman Beyond, because, you know, Bruce becomes sort of that Alfred character. But I like, and just like his personality, you know, he's the way that Bruce saw him. Instead of like the way he actually was, so he has all these snide comments, which I thought those were great.
Yeah, and I think going on, it's pure speculation here. You know, we don't really know how long this Terry McGinnis has been active for,
right?
So clearly he's been trained by Bruce, and compared to the TV show where Terry was a novice and Bruce was sort of that wise, jaded mentor, you know. At least the way that Terry came off, he seemed like he had a bit of experience under his belt. He's going to be kind of that Grim Avenger type, because he clearly came from a very disturbing future. And Alfred's going to be that levity, you know, kind of reverse, whereas Bruce was kind of the dour one in the show, and Terry kind of was, so, you know, as Batman, surprisingly, the one adding sort of the humor to it.
Right.
Alfred's going to have to play that role because, I mean, he's a machine. He doesn't give a crap what happens. And Terry just saw, like, everyone he cared about ripped to shreds, so.
Yeah, true.
Spoilers.
But I mean that's kind of prequel stuff.
Yeah.
If you're digging into, you know, if you haven't read issue zero and you're just digging into Futures and issue one, you're gonna be fine.
That's true. Issue zero, I completely forgot about that. I did read that.
But... Right. I actually haven't, and still, like, even when you were like, everyone he saw, like, everyone he loves, he just saw die. It's like they kind of say that in the book.
Yeah.
And that's all like the first couple pages. So we're not saying like at the end Terry reveals this dark thing.
I think as far as spoilers go, we can assume that anyone that comes across this podcast either A, is going to be inspired to get into comic books, or B,
is already into comics.
Has already into comics and has either read or understands that listening to a podcast before you read your week's pull of books is probably a bad idea.
Right. We're going to avoid the major things, like there's a character death in Future's End because it's a major event. There's like going to be a character death. We're not going to say who it was.
Actually, there are several character deaths if we want to get technical.
Well, okay, the one anybody actually cares about.
Okay, well, okay,
the one that everybody actually knows who it is.
I think that people know who the other ones are.
I didn't.
Well, you've never read those books. I kind of want to talk about it. Nah. I kind of need to bring it up.
Let's talk about it outside of the show. We've got a lot of other stuff.
Fine. We're making it a feature in a future installment.
Okay. Well, and one thing, just one more thought, kind of my thoughts on Future's End, or at least a part of it. I really like the character of Firestorm. I like the idea, I think, more than the execution, because every iteration I've seen has always turned into you have the science kid, and then you have, like, the not science kid. Like the jock, the face of the body.
Yeah.
And I feel like, especially going through Blackest Night, which, like, that's when I was really introduced to the character, you know, this iteration in here seems very similar to that.
Yeah. I mean, I probably have a little more, this sounds pretentious. I did read some of, or interesting enough, like, I kind of followed the Firestorm character prior to, like, Blackest Night.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who Professor Stein is, right?
Yeah, and I know a bit about the character.
Yeah, so it was kind of like the sciencey older mentor guy with Ronnie Raymond, who, you know, was like the jockey, like doesn't give a crap type. And I mean, obviously, we're dealing with cyclical stories with and reboots where characters have kind of reset a little bit. So I guess the original Ronnie, you know, did kind of mature.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, you know, and then he had died, and then his Blackest Night came around, he came back, and he kind of revertigoed. As from what I saw with Jason Rush, he came off a little more. I mean, he was aggressive in the issue, but in a sense that, I mean, if I was that dude, I wouldn't pander to Ronnie whatsoever. I know they kind of have to work together,
right?
But it's sort of like the way that they were acting in this first issue that's supposed to be set 5 years in the future. Now, I know they hint at some stuff that happened that might have sort of revertigo their relationship again, but right. I mean, it basically goes back to the first issue of Firestorm, where it was smart guy and jock guy get together, don't get along, and I mean, it basically says that they haven't learned anything in 5 years,
right? Yeah, which isn't, I mean, that's kind of the issue a lot of us have had with the New 52 as a whole, is like, oh, these characters are supposed to have been around for 5 years and they're acting like they just put on the suit yesterday.
Exactly. I think, and that was a big thing with the Justice League origin arc, and then following up saying that, you know, 5 years have now passed.
They still don't trust each other and all that. Yeah.
They're acting the same way. I think that's, just, you know, you kind of have to accept it at this point, of course, but it's a hard pill to swallow that, at least the comics we've been reading for the last couple of years have taken, you know, have only been around existing for 5 years, and now we're dealing with a new universe, well, not the same universe, again, 5 years further into the future. And at least as far as this one issue goes, if we just look at it as a sole entity, people haven't changed that much. Except that Hawkman is now on Stormwatch.
Yeah, that was interesting. Well, and I mean, it's hard to say because we didn't really see any of the big players in this.
Yeah, it's true. We haven't seen Batman or Superman or anything like that.
Right, so we don't know what the bigger... But I mean, there's people that, you know, have been doing this for a long time, still in the book, and still seemed a little unprepared for being superheroes.
Yeah, and, you know, they make reference to there's this war that happened. I think it's
right.
Earth 2. I think that's kind of like a secret. That's kind of what happened.
Okay.
I think that, I think they haven't spelled it out in the book, but they keep referring to a war happened between Earths. And I believe it, like, because they announced it. It was Earth 2, and they mentioned that Firestorm mentions that Green Arrow had brought them into the Justice League. So
right after the war.
Yep. So somewhere between in current continuity and, you know, just prior to the war, clearly there's a relationship change with Green Arrow and the Justice League,
right?
In which he could actually have the ability to induct people.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know where I was going with that, but there are
changes. It is a different world.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that I don't like about events where it's like, hey, here's the first issue. We're just going to throw you into it and you'll figure it out as it goes along, which just, like, can sometimes be good, but sometimes it's like, how do I like keep track of the people?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, what were you saying?
Well, I was going to move us on to another topic. We've been harping on this for a bit now.
That's fine. That's fine. I mean, I could probably talk about this issue for an entire segment, but yeah, let's... Maybe we could do like follow-up segments, like follow-up, move on.
Right. Yeah. If we get any feedback and people are like, hey, I want to hear your guys' further thoughts on that, then yeah, we'd totally be interested in sitting down talking about it more. But speaking of events, I want to ask you how the Watcher did not see himself getting shot. Which brings us now to Original Sin, everyone. Marvel's Original big Sin. Event.
Yep. As far as... Oh, right. Original Sin. Yep. As far as him not knowing he got shot, he in fact did kind of see it coming.
Okay.
It's, you know, he, as the Watcher, he sees a lot, but he doesn't... And maybe as an ancient being who's seen everything, they kind of hint that, like, or I guess flat out say that, you know, he kind of has this intuition for going where he thinks change is going to happen.
Okay.
So kind of what happens is he's having this moment where he's like, oh, I'm sensing a great change about to happen. Let me go to it. I guess he teleports to it. I don't know. But he ends up like, he doesn't move. So he thinks that whatever that great change is happening is right in his own home.
Okay.
And that's basically where he acknowledges that there's someone in his home. Like he sees the person who kills him. He's just like, he's like, I see you. Right. So either I think for a character who's that old, I think he just maybe accepted at this point that it was his time to go, that whatever the situation was, it was unavoidable. And he kind of, you know, met his fate, mm-hmm. you know, cause his role to not interfere, maybe in some ways that extends to, well, you know, if I have to die, you know, I still can't, if my death is supposed to happen, I can't interfere. Cause if he has this intuition, this cosmic intuition that's kind of pushing him towards big events, then if that big event is his death, he's not going to interfere with that. So he does see his killer coming. They don't, you know, they kind of gloss over what happens beyond it basically goes from him saying, oh, I see you. And then there's a giant, they cut to a page of a giant explosion at his facility or his home, and then, you know, eventually the characters come across him and he's dead. Mm-hmm. So there could have been some kind of physical altercation between them. Right. You know, it's hard to say for sure.
And I mean, I haven't read Original Sin, but that's pretty much, I mean, that's what happened, right, this week. And the whole setup is somebody's killed the Watcher, they took his eyes for some reason, and it's everyone's like, what do we do now?
Yep, they actually don't, like, they point out the fact that his eyes are missing. I don't think that the characters themselves understand the gravity of his eyes missing. I mean, I don't really understand how the eyes hold all of this, mm-hmm. like, ancient information, but we'll gloss over that, it's fine. It's comic books. You can't argue the fact that eyes are holding, you know, centuries and centuries and centuries of you know, Facebook feeds.
Right. Well, I mean, it's called Original Sin. I mean, there's something about something that happened way back and, you know, way back when.
Yep, they mentioned that. They specifically refer to unoriginal sin. They didn't really specify what it meant. They haven't really gone to the part where, well, actually, it basically, the issue ends with them kind of refocusing on the eyes. The majority of the issue, I guess you can call it setup. I thought it was fairly entertaining setup. Basically, it's Captain America putting Nick Fury Sr. in the role as like chief investigator of the murder.
Okay.
And he kind of takes the issue where they kind of start him off as like the retired super spy. He doesn't really want to get back in the game, and basically as events start to quickly unfold, he kind of comes back around. He's like, you know what? This is my crime scene. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get to the bottom of this. And then you intersperse it with different characters, and you also find out that there's another person of interest who I'm not getting the vibe that they were directly related to the Watcher's death, but they had some kind of information on it happening.
It'll be Wolverine. It's always Wolverine.
You would think he's in the issue, so I'm gonna write Wolverine off as having any kind of primary involvement in the murder. But he is part of the investigation, as far as I can tell. But there's someone who's shrouded in mystery, who's also assembled a team of heroes, including like Black Panther, Scott Lang, Ant-Man, Emma Frost. And actually, I should say he's actually assembled little pocket of teams. Maybe they'll all come together, but as far as I can tell, you've got Punisher and Doctor Strange teaming up, which is an odd combination. Doctor Strange tries to he kind of tries to throw himself in like Punisher's head, like, oh, I sent this guy to a dimension where he's gonna get like, I don't know, I can't remember what the situation was. Something terrible was definitely gonna happen to the dude, which was kind of harsh seeking from Doctor Strange. Almost kind of like, look, Punisher, I can play in your wheelhouse. Let me play ball with you. And Punisher was just like, I'm gonna shoot at your kneecaps if you do that again.
Hey, can we be friends? Hey, do you want to see this cool, horrible dimension I can send you to?
Exactly. That was kind of that sort of like, you know, they're kind of measuring each other, and obviously Doctor Strange, and as far as powers go, it's going to whoop the Punisher's butt. But right. The Punisher was just like, I'm not afraid of you. I don't care that you're the Master of the Mystic Guard. It's like, I'm going to shoot out your kneecaps, dude. So you got all these little factions. Like, you've got this, you know, you've got Nick Fury and anyone he's going to work with. And you've got this Mystery Man and his, handful of factions. You've got Winter Soldier and Moon Knight teaming up with Gamora from the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then I remember some of that was, but anyway, so all these little basically sets up all these little pieces. I felt in a fairly efficient and entertaining manner, because when you get these big events, whether it's Marvel or DC, the biggest thing can be the first issue, and just trying to get you have to get all these things on the board. You have to get like an exciting incident on the board, but you want it to flow organically, and you want the characters to sound right, because you have a lot of characters that tend to exist in their own pockets most of the time. And then, especially in a shared universe like this, sometimes you have to kind of write off that, Superman just can't help Batman all the time, when Gotham's having an issue. It's not believable if you constantly think Superman's going to be there to save him.
Right.
You have to always write off like, oh, Fantastic Four in another dimension right now. Like,
yeah,
they probably aren't, but for the sake of the story, you need to make everything feel like it really does work together.
Right.
And I thought, as far as original Sen goes, it did it very well. It actually felt, as far as a big event goes, whereas Future's End was kind of very explodey and, everything was falling apart.
Yeah, Future's End had those big moments.
Yeah, it was a lot of big set pieces. Original Sen beyond the Watcher's death was a lot of intimate character moments, which is rare for any event, Marvel or DC. So that I think that's what really drew me in.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be curious. I mean, I'm kind of jaded about all of Marvel's events, because every 6 months we're going to change everything.
Yeah, well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. In a sense, they always do. I mean,
I'm not saying like, oh, it's good that if they change everything that it sticks, but it's just like, hey, we're going to keep changing everything all the time, and these big crossover events, and hey, if you want to just read your Iron Man book, well, too bad. You're going to watch Tony Stark's adventures as he goes makes hammers and, stuff like that.
I want to see that.
That happened. That was in Fear itself. Well, he doesn't make hammers. He makes all those weapons.
All those different weapons.
Yeah, but it's like you couldn't just... Like, that's one of the things I like about when DC does these events. I'm not saying whether or not they do them better than Marvel in any sense. It's just like, if I just want to be off reading Batman, I can read Batman. And yeah, there will be some effects of the after events. But, while they're running concurrently, they're not going to interrupt each other.
Batman might be a bad example, because at least since the New 52 started, I mean, almost every story that Scott Snyder has done has had some kind of tie-in. Now, it hasn't necessarily affected the main Batman book.
Right.
But, I mean, it does, basically if you're reading any of those other titles, it might help the big characters, but the smaller titles always get affected where their stories get interrupted with some kind of, oh, let's go see what happened 5 years ago, or let's see how the Joker apparently had enough time to get to all of them. Or Superman titles, all the Superman titles, they tie in like every 6 months.
Okay.
Which can be a frustration. So not destroying your argument or anything, because I totally see where you're coming from. And I think, at least because I have apparently nothing to do, so I'll read like different Marvel blogs, like from the actual editors.
Uh-huh.
They do recognize that. Like they even said, like with Infinity, their event from last year,
mm-hmm.
that I guess whatever was going on behind the scenes, you know, they kind of had a time crunch, and it would have been nice if you could have read Infinity 1-6 all on their own. But in reality, you had to read Avengers and New Avengers, and the chapters all tied together.
Right.
So, and they acknowledge that, you know, that's something that certainly has happened in previous events like Civil War, Secret Invasion, but I think their plan with the Original Sin is that there's the main book, which is the murder mystery of who shot the Watcher and what does that mean.
Who done
it? And then the inside, who done it? And then when with the way the eyes come into the picture, that allows all the issues to tie in, because you're like Amazing Spider-Man's tying in, new event, you know, the Avengers books are tying in, the X-Men books are tying in. But instead of you having, you know, you get to like Original Sin chapter 4 and thinking that, oh, well, I didn't read Amazing X-Men number 8. You know, or right. whatever. In reality, like all the books get to take the incident with the eyes, where the eyes kind of reveal to everyone all these hidden truths uh-huh. about their lives, and then they get to go off in their own direction. So right. you can read okay. Original Sin for Original Sin.
All right, well, and that's nice.
As far as I can tell, I've only read the first issue.
Nice.
They say that, but what, you don't right. really
you don't know what's going to happen until it happens. Which, yeah. And speaking of another big event going on right now, I think we should shift gears a little and talk about, you kind of mentioned Scott Snyder and Batman, and we've got Batman Eternal. We're about a month and a half into Batman Eternal.
Issue 5 and, just came out today.
Yes. For those who are not reading Batman Eternal, it is this, it's coming out for a year, right? Like they've said, it's going to be 52 issues.
It's all... I don't really want to do the math, but all of the weekly series are ending in March of next year.
Okay.
So as far as Batman Eternal goes, it should be about 52 issues.
Okay, so yeah, for one issue per week until next March, they're putting out this book called Batman Eternal, and that'll be about 52, yeah. And it started beginning of April, in which Gotham is going to... Something big is going to happen in Gotham. And one thing I really liked now getting into this month and a half, there was sort of a preview of it in one of the Batman books in the middle of the whole Year Zero thing. They showed, here's what Gotham's going to be like after, you know, after this whole Batman Eternal thing happens, and it's all going to be different. And Selina Kyle is going to be this crazy, like, mob boss chick. And, you know, Harper Lee, if you haven't read 52, Harper Row. Why do I keep wanting to call her Harper Lee? That's the author of, To Kill a Mockingbird, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So, yeah, Boo Radley is going to cause some problems. Harper Row, who's this chick who sort of becomes very interested in Batman's mission and starts trying to insert herself into it. And everything we've seen so far is Batman telling her to stop, to not do it. And then we see, you know, at the end of Batman Eternal, she's going to be a superhero. What was her name? Bluebird, which I actually thought she was pretty cool. I liked the whole Bluebird thing. And so now, month and a half into Batman Eternal, we're really starting to see, because these first few issues were all about Jim Gordon and Batman. Jim Gordon's been arrested. Batman's trying to figure out, like, what happened and, you know, how Carmine Falcone is behind all of this, because he's back in Gotham. And this week, we kind of changed pace. I think Batman was in 2 pages of the whole book. And we're really focusing on Tim Drake and Harper Rose in it quite a bit. And I actually like that we're starting to see the bigger Gotham connection. And how these threads that were set up in this first couple issues are really starting to kind of spread out instead of it being all streamlined. Oh, Vicky Vale's also there for some reason.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like instead of it all being streamlined and we're just going to focus on Batman and, you know, Jim Gordon a bit as he goes through this trial. Instead, it's like we're really branching out and we're seeing the bigger picture, and that this is really, really is going to have a really big effect on Gotham and the world at large.
Absolutely. And I just have to say, Andy Clark's art is phenomenal in this issue.
Really? I wasn't a big fan.
Really? I don't know. There's something about him. I don't know who I can draw comparisons to him, but his is as far, especially for a weekly book, you know, they're definitely on a tight deadline. Not that he's doing every issue, but is his art's well defined? The characters, as far as I can tell, their posture, their pose, you know, is realistic and accurate. And the level of detail, like I'm looking at the credits page with Tim Drake looking over all the computer screens or holo vids of the kids in the beds, and there's
that part was very great.
Cool image.
Yeah, no.
So you know, there's definitely a style to him that I think is, you know, definitely not everyone's going to gravitate towards it, but as far as structure goes, you know, there's a real intent and professionalism to it.
Oh no, I thought technically, it was very well done, from an art perspective. But I don't know, I felt like the characters didn't look like the characters. I just felt like Harper Row didn't really look like Harper Row. Vicky Vale, I mean, this is more of a color thing. Isn't she blonde? I thought her big thing was that, and not her big thing, but like every.
Is she blonde? I thought she.
She's blonde in like every iteration.
Well, I mean, Lois Lane was redhead in Man of Steel.
Okay.
I don't know. That doesn't really justify anything.
Right. Well, and I haven't seen Vicky Vale in the New 52. They could have done a whole makeover, but I knew even just before, like back when Dick Grayson was still Batman. Spoiler alert. Oh, that's something I kind of want to talk about. They mention. So we don't even know the ultimate fate of Dick Grayson because Forever Evil is still not concluded.
And you did want to bring that up.
Yeah. And so I just think it's hilarious, just side note, that Forever Evil still has, what, two issues left, or is it just one?
I think it's just the one, but it's been pushed back until...
Until May 21st. Late May? Like, I think something like that. But I just think it's hilarious that their conclusion to that event, which is supposed to tie up what's kind of happening... you know, with like Dick Grayson is the big thing, and Lex Luthor has still not finished, and they've launched into Future's End. But that, whatever. My thought is there was sort of some hints here in Batman Eternal to the Dick Grayson thing. And did you get the idea that they were kind of saying like that Dick Grayson is, as far as a lot of people know or think, that he's dead?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's one of those... discrepancies that you get between like reading things on comic book resources and then reading the issue, where you get a lot of insight when you're reading these interviews with the creators and stuff. So if anyone who's been on CBR in the last 2 weeks knows that Dick Grayson is going to be launching back into his own series as like a secret agent,
right?
But that the whole world thinks he's dead. So I mean, it's possible that if they had written these, then they may have written these issues believing that Forever Evil would have come out already, so we would have known his ultimate fate, and right. So it wouldn't have been written any differently. The way I read it was like they were trying to accept the fact that they couldn't reveal his ultimate fate, because they, you know, it's like Damian, you know, Dick, like they're all, you know, they didn't say they're dead, though we know Damian is. Right. And I think with Dick Grayson, at least the fact that he is, especially with the way that Batman reacted to Damian dying, you know, Dick can't be that far below Damian as far as personal connection.
Right. Oh, absolutely Bruce. Not.
So no. The fact that he obviously has his hands full in Batman Eternal, but the conversation between him and Tim Drake about it was cool. Like it was cool as in like a Cold War style cool.
Right.
But it didn't have the emotional punch that I would have needed. You know, to believe it, I guess.
Right.
Obviously, well, Bruce does know that the Dick is alive.
Right, right. But it seemed to me that, I mean, especially, you know, with everybody not trusting Bruce right now because of the whole death of the family thing, like, it's just odd that, you know, he would know and he wouldn't tell, like, Tim Drake, you know, another Robin, that, hey, Dick Grayson's still alive, because it really seemed like that, I mean, and maybe we'll find out later that, hey, he's... you know, he knows that he's still alive and he's just really upset about all this whole thing. But it seemed really a lot like that he really thought that that Dick Grayson is no more.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as far as that plot line goes, the fact that Bruce knows something again that the rest of the Bat family doesn't know, it's like you didn't learn your lesson with the Joker. And, right, but you know,
this is more of a protection thing, I imagine, because in Forever Evil, and I mean, this was like 6 months ago, so I don't feel bad saying this, that Dick Grayson's identity is revealed to the world So, you know, it could be a bigger level of protection where it's like, hey, the more people that know that Dick Grayson is still kicking around, the greater of a risk it is to his loved ones and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but I mean, that's basically his same justification for not telling that the Joker had invaded the cave was for protection. And I mean, if anyone should be allowed to know that Dick was still alive, it would be the Bat family. I mean, Barbara, Tim, you know, Alfred. I feel like they would deserve to know whether or not the rest of the world knows.
Right.
You know, I don't know. At the very least, I'm okay. On some level, I'm okay with this. The world thinks Dick Grayson is dead, you know, but he's still going to be around and kicking and doing action hero stuff. But the fact that the inner family doesn't know seems a little unnecessary.
Yeah, I guess we'll see as events unfold. I mean, it's going to be, I don't even know where they're going to really delve into that aside from the new Dick Grayson comic. I mean, it's not like they're going to take a break in Batman. Well, maybe, because Zero Year is about to end.
In a couple months, it's going to end. And another thing that they're definitely glossing over is the fact that I feel like any sane person or intelligent person, I should say, could figure out that Bruce Wayne is Batman. On some level, I realize that. It's me having known that Bruce was Batman my entire life, but
right.
The fact that now Dick Grayson's identity is public.
Right, it'd be easy to kind of draw some connections, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you go back to like a year's worth of like news, you know, things, and like when Bruce stepped up and said, I'm announcing Batman Incorporated, and all of his wards are there.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, huh, Dick Grayson, associate of Bruce Wayne, also Nightwing. Like,
right.
You know, oh, Bruce Wayne funds Batman. Maybe he actually is Batman. It just, you know, why would he send his ward off to fight with some crazy masked man? He is a crazy masked man.
Right, and there was a Vicky Vale storyline, you know, just pre the 52 relaunch that I don't think really got resolved. That was about her, like Vicky Vale, figuring it all out, and she's trying to like kind of corner Dick and like talk to him about it.
It was Tim Drake, actually. It was the Red Robin comic.
That happened in that, too? Because it happened in Batman.
I think there were some issues that the Batman, the Dick comics did reference it, but it was the main story was in the Red Robin.
Well, maybe that's where the main story was, but there was definitely like a scene where he goes to dinner with Vicky Vale, and she's very heavily referred, like saying that, oh, I know something.
Yeah, she does that. She like that sprung out of the Red Robin comic that Fabian Nezia something or other, you know, was writing. And basically, I guess some of Tim's tactics were he was going to fake being disabled. You know, so, oh, Red Robin's running around, but Tim Drake is disabled.
Right. Yeah. He's missing a leg. How could
that,
it be?
How are you going to do that? And I really don't remember how that story ended up being resolved. They did resolve it in some fashion, but I don't know. You know, as ultimately, Vicky Vale dropped the story,
right? As
or decided it was bunk. Yeah, but you know, still the fact that Dick Grayson is public and doesn't, you know, he might be considered dead, but that doesn't stop the fact that everyone in the world knows who Dick Grayson is,
right,
from drawing conclusions. So that's, I think, what I'm more interested. Now that I know Dick Grayson's fine, I'm interested in seeing, how does this go back to Bruce and his secret identity, and what does that mean?
Right. Yeah, I'm curious if they're even going to touch in on that. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see whenever that book comes out.
How would you feel about a Batman who is known publicly? I feel like they've never, even in alternate universe stories, they've never touched on a world where people know Bruce. Well, except for
Kingdom Come.
Do they do that? Does the world know in Kingdom Come?
Yeah, the world, well... Yeah, I can't remember exactly. It's been a couple years since I've read Kingdom Come, but there's something where Clark goes to visit him, and he's all, you know, Bruce is all beat up, and the cave is all destroyed, and he says that when his identity was revealed, that Bane and I think Two-Face came and caused some trouble.
And I know in Injustice, Superman revealed his identity as well, but
through a tweet.
Hey, Superman, super tweets. But I think as far as like, you know, like the same way that Marvel did with Daredevil, to actually see an ongoing story with the Batman, if you want to call him that.
Right.
Dealing with the ramifications of, you know, I think a lot of times with the alternate reality stories, they can kind of go for broke. Like, if you read any of like the what if Marvel stories, where like, what if, you know, what if Uncle Ben was bit by the spider? It's almost like they use it as a justification for like why they did the stories the way they did them, because it's like, oh well, if Uncle Ben was bit by the spider, then like everyone would die. You know, right. Like, it would almost always end in complete disaster. So yes, terrible things happen in the main universe, but it's better than what could have happened.
Have you ever read the Elseworlds where Bruce is chosen as the Green Lantern?
I haven't read those. No.
Yeah, it's. Things are largely the same as one half, because I mean, this was written back in like the, I don't know, 80s. So it was just like, oh, basically, it would be Green Lantern with Bruce Wayne, aka Hal Jordan. I mean, Bruce Wayne. Like, it's really, he's not any different at all.
He's just
a different guy wearing the ring, because he goes and like fights Sinestro and beats him in largely the same way. Because it's back when Sinestro was just yellow, and that was Green Lantern's weakness, which was hilarious.
Yeah, they didn't really have good weaknesses way back when.
No.
Kryptonite, yellow, wood. The original Green Lantern was weak against wood.
Really?
Martian Manhunter, weak against fire. Who isn't weak against fire?
That still like exists, doesn't it?
Yeah, Martian... he still has a...
Is it a weakness or like a phobia? I've never been clear on that.
I think it's like a weakness phobia. Maybe it hurts him more than it would hurt the average person being lit on fire. But I there might be a phobia involved there too.
Well, I think I've been watching Young Justice, which I'll kind of talk about near the end of the show. And there's a part where these two other robots that are like Red Tornado are there fighting them, and they trap Ms. Martian, that's his like niece or whatever, right? They trap her and Aqualad inside like this fire cage, and Aqualad's like sweating it, but she's like straight up passed out. Like, for some reason, even just being close to fire has completely like incapacitated her.
Indubitably.
Yes. So,
Fire bad.
Fire bad. Speaking of Frankenstein, where was I going with this? Let's just hop on to the next topic here. Gotham.
So, yes, keeping with the Batman theme.
Actually, you know, since we're kind of segueing here, because we're going to segue now from kind of our thoughts on current goings on to news events, I have a little quiz for you.
Oh, boy. All right.
All right. Lay it on me. Can you name all of Stan Lee's cameos in the official Marvel movies? I'm talking Iron Man through Captain America 2.
Like everything he's done in each movie?
Like his cameo, just... where he's popped up, who he's been.
Who he's been. Okay.
I think there's been about 9 movies. So
yeah, do you have a list? Like,
I do. I have a list right in front of me. Yeah.
Okay. Iron Man 1, he was like a Hugh Hefner type at a party.
Okay. Yeah. We're counting Incredible Hulk, so you know that's the next one.
Incredible Hulk. Oh man, Incredible Hulk. What was he in that movie? I'm gonna have to come back to that one.
Okay.
Iron Man 2. Iron Man 2 was next. Mm-hmm. Iron Man 2. He was, I think I'm already failing. I can't
remember the Iron Man 2. It's funny. I couldn't remember the Iron Man 2 one either, because that's actually the Marvel movie I've seen the least of.
Yeah, I've only seen it a couple times.
All right.
Okay, Iron Man 1, Hugh Hefner. Thor, he was driving the truck.
Yep, he's driving the truck in Thor.
Captain America... Wasn't he just like at that the Stark Expo convention or something?
Nope.
He was doing something. Nope. Okay.
Wow.
Was he a soldier?
Well, you're close.
He's bad.
No, you're close on the soldier thing.
Was he just at the camp or something that Steve was training at?
Mm-mm.
All right. Was he a drill instructor?
Nope. Man, I really expected more out of you on this.
I I expected more of myself. All right, let's
keep going. Avengers. We'll tally up your score at the end.
Avengers. He was on the news camera at the end where he was like, superhero. Let's see if that's not true. Yeah. I do all the other ones. I already got Thor. Then Iron Man 3. Wow, I can't even think of Iron Man 3. I don't know what happened.
You are bringing such disgrace to your family.
I know. I don't know. I'm having a complete mind blank. Iron Man 3. But in Captain America, Thor 2, he was in the psych ward with Dr. Selvig. Captain America, he was the guard at the Smithsonian.
Yep.
I think that's 10.
That's it.
Caught up now. I got to work my way back.
You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You got 5. So you're missing 1, 2, 3, 4. So you've got 5 out of 9. It's not bad. It's not great. You're still failing the class.
Man, Iron Man 3, was he like, the host of something?
Oh, you're so close. You're in the general ballpark. Not a host.
He wasn't a host, or like a judge.
Ooh, okay. He was a judge. What was he judging?
Judge. I can't. Iron Man 3. What was going on in that movie? Beauty pageant?
There it is.
I can't remember the context. Like, why were they at a beauty pageant?
Tony Stark is like, it's in the small town that Tony Stark's like running around in.
I don't like. I came to me, but I can't remember how he got. I remember he's at the bar when the extremist lady fight. Like,
right. No, there's the news channels are covering the beauty pageant, and that's when he goes to the news truck, and then like. Taps into Jarvis and
Yeah, and the guy that was like super obsessed with them.
Yeah,
okay, it kind of segues. That's why, unfortunately, with a lot of these cameos, I mean, despite the fact that Stan Lee is very memorable, what he's doing, it kind of gets like it's there and then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess a better fan would have gotten it.
The ones that you missed: the Incredible Hulk, he drinks the soda that has Bruce Banner's blood.
I don't really. I mean, I honestly haven't seen that movie since the theaters.
Yeah, he gets gamma ray sickness. Iron Man 2, Tony Stark mistakes him for Larry King while leaving a gala. I'd forgotten that.
Right.
And then Captain America, the First Avenger, he's a general in World War II, and they're at like some award ceremony, and they're waiting for Steve Rogers to get there, and he's like, I thought he would be taller.
Oh man, it's all coming back to me.
Yeah, I figured it
would. Oh man, I failed.
Yeah, I.
That was bad.
So I'm now accepting applications for a new co-host.
I'm accepting applications to be replaced.
Well, you're not involved in the hiring process here. Anyway, we'll try to move on and forget your shame forever. Even though I'll probably bring it up multiple times.
Can we edit that?
Nope,
I'll that come back is with the right answer.
And that's going to be the entire podcast now.
Oh man.
So Gotham is a new thing that's happening on Fox.
Yep.
It is a television show coming next season that is going to follow the adventures of a young Jim Gordon in his his early days of being a cop in Gotham City. Back when it was rife with corruption and whatnot.
You know, I think it's always been rife with corruption, but I guess it's neither here nor there.
Right.
Well, I have one question. Why is it on Fox? Why aren't all DC shows on the CW, which is, I think, like the one actual like Warner Brothers owned channel?
That's because
I think like Constantine's going to be on NBC, I'm pretty sure. Gotham's on Fox. And you're going to get Arrow and Flash on CW. Which, you know, they tie together, which is fine, but even if Gotham isn't going to tie together, why doesn't it exist on the same channel? My thoughts.
You know, that's a great question. I mean, it seems like they're kind of doing what Marvel did before they had their whole shared universe movie thing, where they're kind of optioning out. And, you know, maybe people saw the success of Arrow, and they're seeing the success of these movies, and they're like, hey, and, you know, we can't get the rights because they're doing all these shared universes. Let's start opting for these other, you know, like this other option, which is let's do a TV show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But anyway.
But the trailer, what did you think of the trailer?
You know, I really like the trailer. It's obviously, you know, from watching it, it's everything that happened in the trailer is going to be in the first episode. Yeah, I thought that the actor, I am completely blanking on his name right now, Ben McKenzie. I was going to call him like Brent McKenzie, but I think that I'm thinking of the Flight of the Conchords guy, Britt. Yeah. But I think he looks like he's going to do a great job. He's played a cop before. I can't remember on what show. I think it's interesting that they're introducing some of these characters beforehand. I think primarily the ones I'm most interested in are Cobblepot and Nigma, Edward Nigma, Cobblepot being the Penguin, for those who don't know, and Edward Nigma being the Riddler. And the way that I've heard Cobblepot being described in the show is that he's this...
Yeah, I think it's...
Go ahead.
No, you finish your thought.
He's like, you know, he's this low-level, like, gun dealer who dreams of one day having this big empire. So I think that, you know, if they're slowly tracking with him throughout the years to see him slowly grow into the guy that becomes the Penguin, like, that idea is super cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm totally about that idea. I think it's odd that they're doing a young Poison Ivy. I don't think she's going to be in much besides the first episode. Maybe she'll show up every now and then. The young Bruce Wayne. Yeah. You know, I think that can have some really cool implications. Young Selina Kyle, also kind of weird, but if they don't force her on us, I'm okay with it. One thing I'm curious about is they really make it seem like the cops are like really fighting for Gotham City, which one thing I really like about Jim Gordon is when he enters Gotham, the police department's really corrupt. And so, you know, he's kind of that shining light of like, how do I balance not getting, you know, my ass handed to me by other cops, with still like fighting the corruption. And I hope that's an element of it, that Gotham still has that seedy underbelly where, you know, the cops are taking a cut and he's trying to do true justice, while, you know, not getting thrown out of the system or getting transferred because he feels like he can make a difference here in Gotham.
Mm-hmm. I think we might see that through the Harvey Bullock role. As someone who's already been in Gotham, whether he's going to be corrupt or not, he's definitely going to be very jaded. Mm-hmm. I think especially with Donald Logue, I don't know, great actor. I'm actually really excited to see him in the role. I think that was perfect casting. It was funny when they thought he was going to be Gordon, but whatever. I'm definitely excited to see that dynamic play out on the screen. I'm cool with them introducing like a lot of like the villains and stuff, you know, and kind of seeing where they were, you know, when Bruce was still a young boy, because they had to have existed, you know, even in the comics. Like, what were they doing when Bruce was just a boy? Whether they were around the same age or older, like,
right?
That I think is going to be a great element. I don't think they had to introduce all the villains all at once.
No, and I think really like a lot of what we saw in that is like those are just going to be those little Easter eggs, like, oh, they go and talk to this young girl, and at the very end it's going to be like, oh, you know, what's your name? And I'm totally blanking on Poison Ivy's real name right now.
Well, according to IMDb, it's Ivy Pepper. Is that the real name?
No, it's Pamela that's something.
The real name. Pamela Isley. Apparently on IMDb, they refer to her as Ivy Pepper.
That's, I mean, who knows? I mean, that's just an IMDb listing. We don't know what it's going to be. That's IMDb,
yeah.
And I mean, there's so much we still don't know about. I mean, it's a 2-minute preview for what's going to be a, you know, 45, hour and a half long episode. I don't know how long the first episode's going to be.
Yeah.
And that, I mean,
I think...
Go on.
I think what we can talk about is, as far as the aesthetic goes, I think it's going to look cool. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things I was really worried about is that, and this is probably one of my biggest gripes when it comes to the CW shows, is whether they're really about pretty. Like vampires or not even that. I mean, I don't know if I've just been reading superhero comics long enough, but I just kind of assume everyone's going to be attractive.
Right. And that's one thing, whenever people like complain about Arrow, they're like, oh, everyone's so attractive. And it's like, yeah, that's a comic book.
Yeah. I know that doesn't bother me. I think there's this weird dark like aesthetic that goes on with all the CW shows. Like you see a commercial for a show, if they didn't say it was CW, you would still know it's CW. Mm-hmm. So I think going in to the Gotham trailer, I was really curious how the aesthetic was going to play out. I didn't think it was going to be like CW because it's a different channel, but I mean, from what little I've seen of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the aesthetic is one of the biggest things that turns me off. I feel like if it was presented differently, I'd be more down with it.
Right.
But I was pleasantly surprised with the way that Gotham looked and felt mm-hmm. in the trailer.
Yeah, and you know, people complain kind of about, you're starting to get all these complaints from comic book fans that like were really tired of gritty, you know, because that was kind of the cool thing to do back when it was like, you know, the 90s were a really bizarre time for comics. Mm-hmm. And then it's like the 2000s came around. And it's like, hey, if we start being really kind of serious and dark with these characters, you know, suddenly people were like, yeah, that's cool. Let's see what that happens. And now like people are kind of getting sick of the gritty thing. But I think with a show like Gotham, it needs that aesthetic where, you know, you have a, I don't think he's a beat cop. I think he's still detective when the show starts, but still like, cause he's going to be out there on the streets of this crime filled city. Like it needs to be gritty.
Yeah.
Totally. Just rhymed. You're welcome, everybody.
I think you're right. It needs to have a gritty feel to it. And I think what people assume, though, is that gritty can only have one look. It's
right.
A detective drama. It's in a corrupt city. We've seen those kind of dramas in the past. It doesn't necessarily have to be always dark and moody. There can be some sort of range to the aesthetic. And as far as I could tell from the trailer, it had a lot of like black and blue hues to the coloring of it. Mm-hmm. That's how, you know, I'm not a professional aesthetically. Whatever.
Right. It was a lot of muted tones. There wasn't a lot of color.
Yeah. Which is kind of, you know, if like the Man of Steel movie, you know, was pretty muted as far as colors go. I think that's kind of the look DC's going for. It's mm-hmm. kind of like, there's a lot of fantastic stuff happening, but here's some kind of muted, down-to-earth colors to kind of be like, it's happening in the real world.
Right.
I don't know, but...
Right, well, you and I are kind of in the minority among comic fans about Man of Steel, which we don't think it was a perfect movie. But we think it was a lot better than a lot of people. Yeah, a lot of people give it credit for. And I'm very excited for Batman. You know, I'm just going to make this claim right now. I think Ben Affleck is going to be a really good Batman.
Right on. I'm totally down with that too. Sign me up.
We're not going to talk about it. I just want to make that statement because if, you know, people have feelings on that, and that's mine. So, I mean, since we're talking about Gotham and... You know, kind of, I'm going to just divert back to it. I don't think young Bruce Wayne, we're not going to see young Bruce Wayne out there solving crimes on the street. I mean, the first episode is Jim Gordon is investigating the murder of the Waynes.
Yeah, and I think I was telling you about it before, you know, before the show, that obviously Bruce Wayne is probably like 11 or 12. Or mm-hmm. I don't know how old they want to make him. So
right, he looks still, about around that age, yeah.
Yeah, we're still years away from seeing any hint of Batman.
Right.
You know, and I think that ultimately what the show has to do is it's going to, you know, it can end, quote unquote, when Bruce is Batman, assuming it's able to survive for like 9 seasons.
Right.
But it does, I think, like Smallville, quality notwithstanding, it has to chart its own path. Whereas, like, in Smallville, he basically did everything he did as Superman before even becoming Superman.
Right.
And Gotham, you know, yeah, we're seeing the rise of Oswald Cobblepot becoming the Penguin. For all I care, he can become the Penguin before Bruce is ever Batman, and
right.
his story can wrap up, you know?
Right. And I think one thing that actually be cool... is, you know, you have Jim Gordon sitting there, like, trying to figure out, you know, this very, like, complex crime scene, and, like, you know, and then like, oh, here comes young Bruce, because, you know, he was there when his parents died. Like, they're going to bond. They're going to have some sort of friendship. We're going to see young Bruce in the show. And then, like, you know, Bruce is going to take a look at a couple of the pictures, and he's going to point something out that Jim Gordon missed, you know?
Yep.
I think that'd be cool, like, seeing those early plantings.
That Bruce had a natural affinity for certain things that we take for granted as Batman.
Mm-hmm. His genius intellect, which has been utterly ridiculous in some storylines.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. I think we're in a golden age of superheroes and comic books and all that.
Yeah. Don't take it for granted, because in a lot of ways, this is as good as it's going to get.
No, absolutely. And one day the bubble will burst. And that's unfortunate.
And we just, you got to ride it. You got to ride it through. And, you know, I think that through the 50s, through the 90s, you know, there's definitely been some dark points, you know, with comic books, whether it be superheroes or otherwise. But as an art form, as a medium, as a way to tell stories, I think that's what's more important to me, to survive, you know. Mm-hmm. You're not always going to have an all-new X-Factor comic. It's as great as a comic as I think it is.
Right.
You know, these characters aren't always going to have the same meaning, but, you know, as long as the art form survives, then they'll always be around in some capacity. Even if, you know, someday Image becomes the number one publisher over all the other ones, which is hard to imagine, but I think it's completely possible.
Yeah, you know, it's...
People's taste chains and...
It's hard to imagine, but I don't think it's super unlikely, especially considering they're willing to... you know, to tell the stories that the big two aren't going to tell because of their restrictions to these characters. Like Saga, I absolutely love Saga, would not happen, you know, even with as expansive as the Marvel universe is, they would never be like, yeah, let's have a planet where there's a, you know, a giant who has really odd genitals that, you know, walks around attempting to kill everyone.
Yeah. I mean, that probably on some level comes down to, you know, content rating. But
Right. But I'm saying, like, Image is willing to give the freedom. Like, I mean, Saga doesn't need that, but that's what, you know, what Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples have decided. Like, if we want to tell the story we want to tell, we need to be able to go, you know, go loose, go crazy.
Yeah. No, I think it's also going to come down to, and that... there's like this perception that like one can't exist without the other, that, you know, that Marvel is somehow stepping on, you know, Marvel and DC are these big two, that they control the industry. And I don't think that, you know, I think they obviously, as any business would want to be, they want to be on top.
Right.
But I don't think they're really going out of their way to say, like, we're going to keep Image and Dark Horse down. It's just...
No.
Guys, they're just comics. Marvel and DC are always going to tell us superhero comics. They don't have any incentive or reason to tell, you know, anything, you know, any other than the characters that are, right. their resources are stretched thin. Let Image and Dark Horse and, you know, all of them, Ani and Avatar and all that, let them tell these alternative stories,
right,
you know, and just accept them all as a whole.
When I want a superhero comic, I'm going to go to DC or Marvel.
Exactly.
You know, and that's great, because I'm always going to want a superhero comic, even if, you know, I'm only picking up one.
Yeah.
I'm always gonna want that fix.
Yeah, there's the people that argue that, like, I think they're kind of the pretentious hipster crowd, but they're basically saying, like, if it's superhero, it sucks. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think that's unfair. I think that's oversimplification, and there are plenty of terrible superhero comics. There's plenty of great ones from both companies.
Oh, absolutely.
And the same thing goes for Image. I'm not picking, you know, that's just... That's just, I at least from me reading, like, comic book forums, which is probably maybe the one of the last things I should do, but just from reading it, you definitely get these sort of closed-minded people where they've made up a decision in their mind, and mm-hmm. that's that. And it's like, no, you just got to keep an open mind, enjoy what you want to enjoy, and just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Life is so much better.
Absolutely. I agree. And I'm going to use this now to segue into... I kind of mentioned this earlier with Matt Fraction. I don't have this in the notes, but I'd rather talk about this and some of the other stuff. I heard rumor today, and I don't know if you've heard anything about this, that Matt Fraction's time with Marvel is coming to a close. And when he goes, that Hawkeye is just... They're just going to kind of kill it.
Which makes sense. I thought I had read something earlier. I think that was in the opposite direction. I kind of have seen it coming.
Oh yeah.
You know, I don't know why. Because I know his wife, Kelly Sue DeConnick, like she's been getting a bigger presence at Marvel. So I'm sure that it's easy to kind of speculate like, oh, there's a huge fight going on. I don't think that's the case at all. I'm sure that Matt Fraction is maintaining very good relationship with Marvel, because I know he's actually really like good family friends with Bendis, who's like Marvel's go-to guy.
Right.
So as far as friendships and relationships go, I think it's going to remain a positive one.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of though, like, I mean, Fraction kind of getting pulled off of Inhuman, and how long it's taken him to get out the Hawkeye books in the correct order. And I think maybe, I mean, there might be something there where they're just like, hey, maybe we need some distance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's actually more Fraction than anyone. I think happened on Inhuman, you know, it was both sides coming to this isn't quite where we want to go with this series, so we're going to amicably step away from it. And I think Charles Soule is a great replacement writer. As far as Hawkeye goes, I think that Matt Fraction is now seeing great success with his Image books like Sex Criminals, and he's got another one about the Odyssey coming out. I think his thoughts are kind of, his desires are kind of moving towards, I just want to do my own thing and not be held down by the restrictions the superhero comics have on me. And I don't know, I personally think that, you know, if you can have your feet in both, we'll keep it that way, because there's always going to be more readers on the superhero comics.
Oh yeah, I think we see Snyder doing that. Snyder's been doing that. I mean, he's at the Wake right now, and they just started back up with
American Vampire
second cycle. Yeah.
Yep.
Which I'm picking up again for some reason. I love American Vampire. I just, last time I picked it up, I just stopped reading, and it became one of those books that I just had piling up. And anyway, I still have not even read the first cycle entirely.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like definitely something I've seen with Matt Fraction forthcoming. I bet, you know, as is the case, I'm sure even in the short term, I think he'll have more work with Marvel in the future.
Yeah,
I'm not sure where the rumor started. I can see why it would start.
Right.
I feel like it's not the end of the story.
Right. It came from, you know, and even like the guy, it came from my comic shop. And when I was talking to the guy about it, he's like, now, you know, I heard it from this guy, which means it's like, you know, fourth hand information.
Yeah.
So, you know, I decided it might be an interesting point, because you and I are both fans of the Hawkeye.
I can't say Hawkeye. I can only say Hawkeye. Apparently.
Hawkeye? According to who?
Yeah. According to Anna and all my other friends. And
that's because I pay them money to belittle you.
Oh, that explains everything. But yeah, no, I mean, it's been a great book. I certainly knew it was... He kind of launched into it saying that there was a finite story to tell. He may have expanded it here or there, but I think some things like the Christmas dog, whatever special... Yeah. Was kind of,
that's just a fun thing,
a fun filler, you know, to get back to the story,
right?
I also think that
would have been better if it came out at Christmas time.
Yeah, and I think that when especially when a book's late, it's everyone kind of without, and the information isn't out there on why it's late. I mean, if you know David Aja, you know, if you know him, like, you know that a fantastic artist takes his time. Mm-hmm. There's going to be delays.
Like Frank Quietly.
Yeah. So, I mean, they shipped two Kate Bishop issues with Annie Wu art before they shipped, you know, one David Aja issue. And then they went straight to, like, the Christmas dog. So, and then they went back to Kate. So, it's definitely something where I think he's taking his sweet time. They're okay with him taking his sweet time. Because Matt Fraction definitely seems like the kind of writer where he's got his shit together. And he's, I don't think he's balking on writing his scripts. I think they're out there, and they're allowing the book to go at its own pace.
Yeah,
much fair enough.
All right, I think we're definitely pushing past our time already. So let's just hit these last couple of news stories, and we'll try to hit them in about 1 or 2 minutes here, and then we'll get into the last stuff we've got. So Mark Webb said that he's eyeing Kraven for the next villain of Amazing Spider-Man 3. He threw out a couple names, but the one that he kept coming back to was like, I definitely like the idea of doing Kraven.
You know, in my spare time, I've been trying to come up with like my own Spider-Man like trilogy of movies in my head, and I've actually in my own stories, I've been kind of coming back to Kraven as like the main feature villain, and I think if you strip him down to his essence, he's a fantastic foil.
Oh yeah,
for Spider-Man, and I could see it going very well.
Yeah, he's a character I thought he was great in the Spider-Man cartoon in the 90s. Like, that's my most vivid memories are the Kraven the Hunter episodes.
Oh man, you're right. Those are such great episodes.
Yeah, because those ones like they really got like to who he was and you know why he was after Spider-Man. It was never really malicious. It was more like he was hunting him for the sport.
It was almost like Spider-Man was a byproduct of the fact that he you know, just as if a hunter that hunts a deer is something personal to the deer.
Right.
As much as the deer might feel that way, but it's Kraven was doing it for his own sense of self purpose, his own sense of self worth, and Spider-Man was just going to be a consequence of that.
Right. And I definitely like to see, especially like with a superhero movie, you know, a villain that's not trying to destroy the city and, you know, it's not doing all this collateral damage and is just going after, you know, the hero.
I agree. I mean, I think it's going to be the third film. They're going to have to do some big speculative. So even if it'll probably be more than just Kraven, but
right. And I haven't seen the second one, so I don't know what they set up. And don't worry, don't say anything.
Yeah, I don't want to say anything. You know, just it's been early enough that not everyone has seen it. Definitely potential there for Kraven. Mm-hmm. Interesting foil for Spider-Man. You know, cool with me. We'll see how it goes.
Cool. And then the other point we'll hit on, because you apparently really want to talk about this, even though I don't really think this is comic book related. And I want to talk about this at the beginning of the show. I think our focus here of what we're going to be talking about is stuff that is, you know, comic book and superhero like news. So stuff that's like entrenched, you know, we talked about Gotham, which is entrenched in comic book history and, you know, and all that. And the example I came up with when I was thinking about this was Star Wars, which, you know, there's a new movie coming out and I'm super excited, but that's not something necessarily we're going to talk about. But the whole news that Marvel is now going to start publishing Star Wars comics, that's something we're going to talk about.
Fair enough.
You know, and that was just kind of my idea. But we'll talk about this because that's what you put on the show notes. That Mighty Morphin Power Rangers is getting a big screen reboot.
Hey, I can keep it quick. I don't have a whole lot to say on it just yet because it was basically one announcement. But
I love Power Rangers. Shoot.
Power Rangers was dope when we were kids, and I'm excited to see what they could do with an actual budget. Would be nice. I mean, that's all I really have to say right now. It's definitely something that could be brought up later on. Yes, there are Power Ranger comics. Apparently not enough to fit David's criteria.
Well, it didn't start in the comics. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't have its roots in the comics.
Fine, David. Fine. You know what? You win. I can't argue with you.
Okay, good. That's right, you can't. I hold the power here.
You know, but just as a quick aside, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, big screen reboot. You know, Lionsgate has been pretty successful with, like, Hunger Games and all that stuff. So, you know, good company to have it under. Let's see how it goes. That's all I got.
As long as Michael Bay is not involved, as I believe someone said on Facebook, I wholeheartedly agree.
Fair, absolutely fair enough. What would be fun to see, and I'm not going to do it, this can be in my own head, is like sort of an Unforgiven meets Power Rangers, where they get all the original cast back.
Yeah, they're not all older. Happen. Well, they're considering all older, one of them's, you know, dead.
Oh yeah. Okay, she can be dead in the film. You know, Lord Zedd has like destroyed Angel Grove, like the world's a wasteland. So you just have a bunch of like cowboy Power Rangers. Oh my God, they haven't done cowboy Power Rangers.
They have.
They've done cowboy Power Rangers.
Yeah, there's an episode. Fight. There's an episode where Kimberly goes back in time, and she meets everybody's ancestors, and it's in the Wild West. Yeah, and they all turn into Power Rangers, and they all have like the tassels on their arms, and like they have boots and stuff. It's exactly what you would expect.
This was in the original run?
Yeah, this was in like okay. I don't have just like a deep knowledge of Power Rangers here, people. I worked a desk job and I was able to do some mindless stuff in the morning that allowed me to watch an episode or two of something on Netflix in the background, and I would throw up Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and I watched the first three seasons like 2 years ago, so it's kind of fresh.
Yeah. Well, I don't even remember that episode, but
yeah, it's like two or three part episode.
Interesting. I'm sure it'll come back to me if I ever get around to it, but
yeah.
Power Rangers, cool stuff. Interesting to see how it goes down.
Yeah, we'll see. I will be interested to talk about, cause this does have its steeping in comics, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when that gets closer, but
yeah. Let's wait for that can of worms.
Well, yeah, we'll let that stew. So as we're wrapping up here, we get to the end. I just think it would be good for us to throw out some recommendations for people who are listening, who may be looking for something new to read or a good place to start if they're not really into comics yet.
Go first.
All right. I actually got two. And sorry, I tried to keep it to one. Oh, the one I originally had was a television show, but I'm like, you know, on the first episode, I really should recommend a comic. So the comic I'm recommending is Five Ghosts. I think like the full title is Five Ghosts, The Haunting of Fabian Gray, which is this adventure comic set in, I think it's like the 1920s, something like that, but it's got that very like pulp feel, very adventure idea, and it deals with like this whole idea called like the dream space, and that human consciousness kind of has this collective where all of our like ideas kind of come from, all our like creative ideas, like of, you know, like the detective kind of character, the pirate kind of character, and it's just this really cool exploration and very imaginative and very bold. So I think that's definitely worth checking out if you're looking for something that's out of the superhero realm, but still pretty fantastical. And then the TV show is, as I mentioned earlier, I'm watching Young Justice. And if you're a fan of DC, definitely check out Young Justice. It is really good. I really like the way they handle actually the Superboy character. There's some stuff that I think could be better. I mean, it's aimed a little bit at teenagers, so there's some relationship stuff that they kind of harp on a little bit, but it's not too bad. Like I said to you, Nick, that I really thought their portrayal of the Joker wasn't that good. Actually very disappointing. But I really think the... I know Robin well enough, but these characters I don't know, like Aqualad and Kid Flash. It's really cool to see them and to get to know them better. And they also bring in like these other members of the Justice League that don't get a lot of time in the comics. Like Red Tornado is a major character in Young Justice, and I think they do a really good job with him, like in making these characters seem cool too, not just like this is the B team. It's like you're actually like, yeah, Red Tornado is kind of awesome, but he has his own storyline going on. And there's
like that.
Yeah, there's other members. Like there's this episode where there's like all these crises going on around, and they show like the Justice League handling them all over the world. And you know, there's like Zatara, who's everybody knows Zatanna, but they don't know Zatara. Is around. I think is Zatara in the comics, is that still her dad?
Yes.
Okay. So Zatara's around. And I didn't know him very well, but I mean, they're doing some pretty cool stuff with him. So I just really like that we're seeing characters that don't normally get the spotlight.
I'm down with that.
Yeah, check it out.
I will check it out.
And what do you got? What are you throwing at us?
I'm going to throw Alex plus Ada. I don't know. Apparently, I've been told that I'm very bad at pronouncing names, so...
Yeah, you're just, not the best.
Just go with it, guys. I think it's a great book. It's by Jonathan Luna. By Jonathan Luna of the Luna Brothers. I can't actually think of his brother's name right now.
No.
They're known for books like The Sword. Ultron? Not Ultron. Girls. Basically, they actually did a Spider-Woman origin series with Bendis once. In case you didn't know,
I did not.
Brian Bendis, because I think I keep saying Bendis without actually saying his full name, so people that might not know him.
I think Bendis is one of those names that people are going to know.
Everyone should know at this point.
Let's see, even if you just Google Bendis. It comes up Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah, he's Googleable.
Googleable. That's coming back.
Or it could just be our search engines are primed to anything comic book related. So
I don't know. He's like the first like five entries are all Brian Michael. Actually, the first like all of them are Brian Michael Bendis. So I think he's just a
Bendis goddess is one of the links. We're getting off topic. So,
anyway, what's the name?
Oh, Bendis was a Thracian goddess of the moon in the hunt. Okay, get back to Alex Placeta. It's basically a book set in the nearest future, where like our cell phones are in our heads now. You know, there's no like physical TV screens; they're all like holograms. But other than that, people still work 9-to-5 desk jobs that they hate. The main character, Alex, is one such guy where he doesn't seem like unhappy, though he does seem like he's somewhat unfulfilled, like he's missing something. But at the same time, he's almost like content with this sort of lack of fulfillment. He's just kind of going through his life. He's got some friends, they hang out. There was a previous relationship, I believe, that was established in the first issue that they haven't really gone back to yet. And then he has a grandmother who's kind of a hoot of a character. She hasn't been in it too much. But so in this world, kind of like that movie Artificial Intelligence, like there are androids who are just very, very like lifelike. They can pass as humans if you don't blow them up, basically. And there's a company that a name I'm drawing a blank, but they basically produce these very high-end androids to be companions that, you know, they don't have any, what's the word? They're not sentient. They basically do whatever you tell them to, but their life, like they look like, I mean, you can have sex with them. You can basically do whatever. But they're basically designed to like be at your hand and foot, almost like a dog. Alex's grandmother, you know, she's like this, you know, a much older lady, and she's got this young hunky robot, you know, that just hangs out with her and tells her how awesome she is. And so she's kind of that doting grandmother character, though. And she's like, oh, you know, you've been so like unhappy or whatever, duh. Like, you know, your birthday's coming up, et cetera, et cetera. And then by the end of the first issue, it's his birthday. He comes home from a party, and there's a box from the Android company in his living room, and there's Ada inside the box.
Okay.
So, you know, he turns her on.
Yeah, he does.
And, you know, and he doesn't really know what to think of her. Like, he immediately wants to return. Like, he doesn't actually want, you know, an android. You know, he tells his grandmother as much. He's like, give it a shot. So he basically is all, you know, he kind of turns her on, like, you know, she kind of goes about the house. And these androids are interesting because, like, you have to feed them, like, human food for them to, like, you know, they just like a cell phone, like, they have a battery that goes down. But you use, like, real food for them to generate energy. And I don't know if they go to they haven't really specified if they go to the bathroom or not. I think it basically gets, like, incinerated and turned into, like, real energy. But so it basically comes to him being like, well, what am I doing? Like, there's something about her that I just feel is off. Like, I'm not connecting her with her the way I thought I would, because he's just like, how can I help you today? What can we do today? What do you want me to do today? And he's just like, oh, like, I don't know what to do. And then it kind of opens up into this bigger thing. Like, there was this attack. Like, there was an AI, artificial intelligence, that gained sentience and, like, killed a whole bunch of people. And then it was destroyed. And so there was, like, a bunch of, like, bills passed, and as far as, like, artificial sentience goes. Like, basically, it's illegal. And then as he starts to explore, or like, he starts to find there's sort of an underground movement that wants robots to gain sentience, that the company that's making these companion robots, you can't make them without sentience. So there's a program in there that blocks them from being sentient. So it's there, but it's buried. So he actually basically where they're at in the series so far, which I feel in many ways kind of completes that initial setup, is he's decided that he wants Ada's sentience to come out, to unbury it. And that's basically where we're at in the book, is now he has this android companion who's completely of her own free will, and how that relationship is going to progress. As far as it goes, I think the dialogue is very good. It's kind of that book where you're not going to get like crazy excitement out of it, but when you want just like characters interacting with an interesting premise and a world not too far off from our own, I think a book brings a lot of that to it. So I usually kind of read it when I'm in sort of like this quiet, introspective mood, where it kind of gives me a launch pad to think about these kind of questions as far as the future goes and artificial intelligence and the rights and the wrongs and all of that. So definitely check it out. I think from what little I've read of Luna's previous work, it's going to go to some interesting places. I should also mention that it's written and drawn by Jonathan Luna, but it's also co-written by Sarah Vaughan, no relation to Brian K. Vaughan,
as far as I know.
Great book. You know, it's six issues in, and I'm really excited to see where it goes.
Cool. Yeah, I still haven't checked that out, but I will have to. I just sent you there on Skype check out the cover for Five Ghosts 12.
I'll definitely check that out.
I like that cover a lot.
Loading, loading, loading. This is totally loading. It's not loading fast enough. Oh. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
All the different personalities. That is cool.
Yeah. All right. We're getting pretty long here. Longer than I think we both thought we would go.
That's cool.
So, works for me. So we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Thank you so much for listening, whoever is out there, all you listeners in Radio Land.
Thanks for checking out our show. I think that, you know, again, it's our first installment, but we're only going to learn from here and hopefully be, you know, more exciting, more interesting, you know, as each installment goes on. So really excited to get this off the ground.
Yeah, and please send us your comments and your feedback. You can email us at heckyeahcomics@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at heckyeahcomics. I think we also have a Facebook page that is Heck Yeah Comics Podcast. So please find us out there on the internet. Let us know your thoughts, your feedback, your questions, concerns. We'll be happy to address them. And if we get, you know, we'll be happy to read some emails and some feedback on the air as well. And you can also find me on Twitter at DavLuz, DavLuz. You can't find Nick anywhere because he's a figment of my imagination.
Yep.
That I am able to make speak into computers.
I have a Tumblr, but I don't even remember my name on Tumblr.
Yeah, I haven't touched that in forever. So if we get any fans, air quotes, we'll make Nick have an online presence.
Yes. If we get 10 new followers in the next 2 weeks, I will be active on Twitter.
Fantastic. You heard it, folks. We will see you guys next week. If you enjoyed it, please go onto iTunes and rate us and tell your friends. And if you hated it, then please tell your enemies.
Hated it, David? Hated it. I feel like there's something's wrong.
It's a word.
All right, whatever you say. I'm just a figment of your imagination. I'm not even important.
Until next time.
worst episode ever.